CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. If you want to join their ranks and support independent content, head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vito. That's the first time I've screwed up my own name. Keep that in, Daryl.
Yes.
Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today
is DJ Rockman once again.
Vincent Banks.
Yes.
This is actually being pre-recorded. In fact, right now we're in early August. When this broadcasts, Vincent, I will be out of the country.
Yes.
I will be in Japan.
Yes.
Probably Japan. With Raheem. Whoever else he brings along.
Jealous. I'm jealous right now because I've been to Japan once. I want to
honestly, I have a name of so this is my idea for gifts. I'm buying everyone at least one individual souvenir.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stop by Akihabara, buy like 100, what are they called? The gacha balls?
The gacha balls.
Yeah. Buy like 100 of them, put them in a plastic bag, bring them, shake. All right, grab one.
Okay.
There's your random one for you.
Okay, there better be some Rockman figurines. I'm just
look,
saying.
Whatever's there. I'm not gonna play favorites.
I know.
If it's Sonic, fine. If it's Rockman, awesome.
Yike.
If it turns out like some just random anime I've never heard of,
yeah,
rock and roll. But there's gonna be no preference at all in any of this. Just gonna be like. You're like, here we go, 100 of them, put them in a bag, grab one.
Yeah.
Because you get to live the experience too.
Hey, trust me, I know the feeling. It's so fun. So fun.
But as we record this, we just got done with, and I recorded an interview with Raheem earlier, but we just got done with Classic Game Fest.
Yep. Oh, that was so fun.
So I'm going to start with a story because it came up in the Mega Ran interview. And so I'm there, whatever, and we mentioned the joke that.
Yeah.
That you come by, see the room, microphones are on, like, oh, crap, they're doing some recording.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, the seat, and this is, let me explain this, because the joke in this thing is
see
that,
what happened was.
Because apparently it was the thing that I took your seat. Yeah. Let me say this first off. When I came over there to the booth area.
Yeah.
There was no seats on your general direction. There's nothing there.
Mostly.
There was only one seat right by Megaran, by Ryu.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, that's the second seat. So I sat down, you came. Turns out it was your seat or whatever. Like, okay, fine. When I got done, I put the seat back.
Yeah.
I was like, that belongs to there. Cool. I'm talking with Raheem about something, maybe, just kind of chit-chatting, whatever. One of the guys at the other booths, like the other table that was like right next to Megaran's.
Yeah, where the figurines were.
Went, grabbed the chair, clearly at your table,
and
put it over there.
Just like, dude, all right, y'all already had like 5 chairs. Why do you need 2 and nobody's here? What the hell?
It was so funny because I was just like, well, damn it. I guess that there's no, like, you're just like, what happened to your, like, what happened?
But it was Sunday. So like, I really didn't care because I had to finish up with the rest of the artists and DJing for them. So
yeah,
my time frame was like, oh, Ari sold my shirts. Okay. Let me go ahead and just stay over there by my booth.
Yeah. You don't really like you of all people, not saying you didn't need a table. I mean, but you had.
I actually really didn't, but
yeah,
like.
Yeah. Cause you had like. Like you almost, it's so funny where they put like you and Megaran and 1UP
and Juice Lee.
And it's just like there's certain like because the thing is like so in Classic Game Fest, for those who have no idea what we're talking about, Classic Game Fest is this event that happens here in Austin, Texas. It's ran by the guys that do Game Over Video Games,
Mr. David, the CEO of Game Over Video Games.
Yes, and it's been going on. What for? I think this is going to be the 10th year next year. So
next
year
is the 10th year, and this is going
to
be ridiculous.
Because I remember the first one I went to. I don't know if it was the first one. It might have been the first one, because that means I've lived in Austin for about 10. I don't know if I've lived in Austin for 10 years. I might have lived a year later. Well, I guess 9 years. Yeah, probably 9 years that I've lived in
Austin. Well, I know the first one was at the actual location store on 183 and
yes,
on
it was. It was at literally in the parking lot
yep.
of the Anderson Lane 183. So, you know. So,
yeah, you were actually at the first year.
It was the first time Descendants of Erdrick played for the first time live that I had no idea, because here's this band, like, oh, cool, video game cover bands. I know mini bosses and things like that.
Yep.
Like, who are these Descendants of Erdrick? Awesome, these guys sound amazing.
Yeah.
And so I've been going on and off for the since the first one.
Yeah.
Depending on schedule, depending on other things happening. And this past year was probably the, I would say, it always gets getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
bigger,
it gets bigger every year, but this was the biggest one.
But anyways, this year what they did with the live bands, they typically have like live bands, I guess I've had it since day zero.
Yeah.
They put in sort of this corner area, you know, where there's a stage and all the kind of marquees and logos.
Yeah.
But like surrounding it almost in this like a
isolated corner
where all the bands. And I was like, well, why is it that they, you know, put these three other guys or four of the guys like that are their performers just like scattered around and didn't like, you know, figure out, well, how can we make this where we have all the bands in this like, you know, row of merch where you're just like, oh, cool, I saw you perform. Hey, who are you? Oh, you're performing tomorrow. What do you guys play? Even better. And like, hey, what's this other thing? You know, you have this like, because that's what happened with me. It was like, I'd see like Tins Verdrick, say, hey, how's it going, Amanda? And then, you know, walk over to the returner, say, hey, how's it going? That kind of thing. Yeah, and try to buy a shirt and things like
say
that.
Say what's up with them. It was funny, though, because like the only two hip hop artist crews that were not with us, like me, Mega Ran, Juice, and 1UP, and Armis, was Doug Funny, was in the middle of like Speed Run and Descendants of Eldrick, and then Tech Force was in the far corner.
Oh, that's right.
With the other rock, with Bit Force in them. So it was like, oh, we got to throw in a little diversity with the other rock bands. It was the craziest thing that I'd seen.
Well, because this was definitely a very hip-hop heavy.
It was a hip hop metal heavy group.
Yeah, I mean, typically it is, but it's like it felt, and maybe it's just the crowd I hung out with. Maybe that's what it was. It just felt that way, because even after the fact of Saturday, there was the after party there at the Hookah Lounge.
Yes,
Lone
Star Hookahs. Yeah, right by RKUFO.
Right, and I had actually walked in. I didn't realize that RKUFO had, I knew they had like all like the Japanese consoles.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they had some of the like multi Neo Geo consoles. And specifically, one of them had, and I didn't get a chance to play because someone was playing at the time, was Capcom versus SNK2.
Yes.
And I was like,
yeah, we told them to bring it back. We were like, hey, dude, just put in CVS2. We got to have it in there. Come on. You know you got to have CVS2 in here. So, because on a once in a day daily basis, you can say that. We'll get over there. Like, let's play. I want to play because I haven't played. I love playing that game. That's by far one of my favorite fighting games.
Yeah, I think we talked about this last time. And I have the PS2 actual, the disc itself. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think the tournament version was the Dreamcast version?
Well, no, tournament, not Dreamcast. It was the GameCube one, which was really weird, which was the EO.
Oh, okay.
They wouldn't use EO. They actually would stick with the PS2 version.
Interesting.
Just because the PS2 version was, which is weird, the characters was more balanced than EO. EO, they made some characters more broken than what they should
be. Okay, I always thought they made that. I always thought it was the opposite with the PS2 version. It was like there's certain glitches or gotchas that weren't like in the Dreamcast.
They kept playing the PS2 version because you would have, like, for example, you have your custom combos.
Okay.
And your characters that do really good custom combos, like Sakura, Bison.
Right.
You know, paint the fence, as they call it. paint the fence move or show, like, combos. That's why they stuck with the PS2 one.
Right, okay. It was Marvel's Capcom 2 that the Dreamcast was, like, the
definitive
version.
Yeah.
That was the definitive version. And for those who are curious, that's the version that they ported over
The Xbox.
Yeah. In fact, what's funny, I can't remember if it was on the dev videos or it was on some of the early things, but I didn't realize this about the Dreamcast version, but all the textures that were on the, so you know, like, so if those of you ever played Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and the same thing applies to the same, you know, CVS2.
Yeah.
Where you have sort of 2D sprites doing their thing in the foreground, but in the background, it's a sort of vector-based 3D graphic kind of thing. Sometimes they're, in the case of Capcom vs. K2, some of the weirdest things. Like, why are they, it's like, okay, cool, they're fighting in London, fine, fair enough. why are they fighting on the rooftop of like some weird beer factory?
Oh, no, yeah, when they're in USA and it's like you got the
weird animatronic beer, yeah. drinking guy just like, okay, I guess that means America.
And I forgot to play that. I wanted to play some CVS2 soundtrack music at Classic Game Fest because this is really good.
Right.
The soundtrack is so good.
It is.
I was going to play True Love Making. Yeah, why
this
not?
This is True Love Making. Yeah, it's True Love Making. My friend hates that song. I adore that song.
I love that song.
Because
you don't hear it that much. Like,
nah,
it's not like CVS 2 where like, oh, you hear CVS, or not CVS 2, but Marvel 2 music and you're like,
take
hell?
For a ride.
Yeah. You know. But what's really cool is Dreamcast version, you can mod to do custom soundtracks.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, so watch some of the tournaments, like side tournaments at in like any big fighting game tournament, FGC tournament. They're doing mod versions. Even on like main stage, they're doing mod versions of the game. So you can hear really cool different soundtracks. Like they have the Power Rangers theme music to the desert stage. Like everybody has their own custom music, and it's
That's hilarious.
It's awesome because it's just showing like how we are in the FGC. We're just, you know, we keep it.
Because I'm now thinking of CVS2, and like my friends would have the joke. If you think about the game itself, there are some like ridiculous. I mean, fighting game levels have always been kind of ridiculous.
Yeah,
but I think CVS2 goes like the extra 9 yards
with the ratio.
Well, because there's the like. Well, where do you want to fight today? Oh, let's fight Antarctica. Okay, that's a bit random.
Yeah.
For that.
And then there's a boat that comes through with all the flags and a TV crew coming from nowhere.
Yeah,
it's like Spider-Man that shoot webs out of
it's like,
imaginary
where do you want to fight now? Let's fight the burning village.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
like okay. Like, yeah. It's perpetually on fire. We're like, where do we fight to, you know, but even like super, you know, Street Fighter 4, it's like, where do you want to fight today? In the middle of a volcano.
Yeah,
it's like
volcano rift, right?
It's like, okay, I don't realize, you know, how did the tournament happen here?
Yeah. like Street Fighter 5 makes a little sense because it's the story mode.
Right.
So story mode gives you that purpose of
right.
like, oh, you're fighting in
but
these
like,
places.
But like, I mean, again, just the because, like, do you remember the backstory for CVS2 for Street Fighter versus Capcom vs. SNK 2.
The storyline is
so
everywhere.
The story is this. This is the story for the game, and this is what I love about fighting games that have this. Because every fighting game has this like tournament of some sort. We're talking about this last time we had, which was about Mortal Kombat having this like weird, fucked up, you know, Battle for the World tournament.
Even though Mortal Kombat X really didn't make sense on that part. I was actually watching a video, and I know you're going to finish this up.
I'll finish
this. But there's a video I was watching on YouTube, and it's this guy was saying everything wrong with Mortal Kombat X in about like 8 minutes. And then at the very end, he goes, wait, so all this goes down, but where's the actual tournament at? He brings a really good point, and I'm like, you know what? I played this whole entire game. I sat through like 4 hours of cinematic stuff. And you're actually not really doing a Mortal Kombat tournament the way it should be. Makes no sense at all. Okay. But we're still going to go with it.
So the storyline for Capcom versus SNK 2 is the Millionaire Fighter 2001. Mark Millennium 2001 Millionaire Fighter.
You literally sound like the announcer right now.
Oh, you would be surprised how much I've got that announcer in my head. I could probably recite Go for Broke.
Oh, gosh.
This battle is about to explode.
Fight.
Live and let die.
Yeah.
There have been times where I've slipped into certain things saying sneaky surprise attack at the start of the round just for the heck of it to see if anyone catches. I'm going to get a sneaky surprise attack at the start of the round.
Yeah. Yeah. You say that. I'm like, yes.
There's a really good YouTube video where they show all the announcer clips and that. And there's ones I forgot about because there's. In certain versions of the game, like certain versions of the game, like especially if you play the arcade, when you're picking your initial groove, there's this thing that I think the quote is, if you pick the wrong groove, you may just lose.
Yeah.
Which then there's the you start to learn these like the Millionaire Fighter 2001 is about to begin. I forget like all. All teams have. Never mind. I only can remember certain ones. I do remember the intro to this day because on the soundtrack they have the intro with this. This is the tournament for the. This is the tournament for the new millennium. You're about to experience the most exciting battle in history. Let's get ready to battle, and then, you know, feel the intensity when power and technique collide. Crush the competition.
Oh, man.
A battle beyond your imagination.
Oh, that game is so
2001
good.
Is the year we make contact. Welcome to the revolution.
Bam, bam,
Capcom
bam.
Versus SNK 2. Mark of Millennium 2001.
You literally do sound like him, dude. Like,
I could do that announcer because it's so... What's great about that announcer and what's great about this that game, we've talked about before, the idea of it being the most Asian, you know, the most Japanese of fighters and the voices and certain things like Guile and stuff like that. That is the voice. And you have to always remember this about when you hear the, that kind of voice, specifically from that game. You know, it doesn't apply to any of the other games because they, especially all the later ones where they've had a localization team that's done it. In fact, even to the point that in Street Fighter IV, they have, you know, the Indestructible song done by a Japanese band. In the Japanese version, the song is called The Next Door.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's an entirely separate song. In fact, I have both versions on my iTunes collection because...
I heard about that, and I know what band it is. It's Man on a Mission.
Yeah.
And they did, then they redid Five, which they did the better version that we should have gotten in the first place. It's like, Indestructible! I was like, wait... Man on a Mission? No. You're the same group I seen in Log Horizon. Hear that band from Log Horizon and so hyped up. Or, like...
I love Indestructible. Indestructible might be my favorite. But I love it because what I love about that that specific song is what it kicks on in Street Fighter 4, because no other Street Fighter, you know, reincarnation of 4, you know, all the different iterations or updates, whatever you want to call them, never had that again. It never referred to it again. It dropped it completely. Because the thing is that you could tell that was the song that Capcom was banking on, or that somebody paid a lot of money to make sure it was on there. Because every you could tell where the retro, where we got to turn back to that theme. Because you'd hear like in the menu music, you'd hear in the versus
online
select,
play.
You'd hear the dent, you'd hear like the line, and you recognize that's their theme, that's the Retronauto, that's the thing we're gonna go back to, and the thing is like it's so gloriously cheesy because like it's so weirdly Japanese imagining this is American, what Americans like,
and I'll put it like this. I was so happy that my Xbox can play music while I was playing fighting games because I literally had to switch that off.
I loved every moment of that song, only because it's such a cheese. I love the cheese. I love that so much.
It was cheese. It was like cheesy at its finest. And you know what? I should have, just to troll everybody, like the last song before leaving.
Dude,
I should have played that.
I would have heard it. I would have fucking been jamming out to it. It's cheesy, but I love it because... I mean, because there's good examples of having, like, because, again, there's that hard, you know, there's hard rock out usually in fighting games.
Yeah.
And I think there's, like, good examples of that. Like, I think, in Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, the song title is Clamato Fever, but essentially it's a remix, reinterpretation of Ken's theme.
Yeah.
And I think it works perfectly for the menu music of that because it gets you hyped.
Yeah.
It feels like, well, this is the game... For the North American audience, you know, out of all the Street Fighters this is the North American kind of example of it. And I think that works perfectly as a theme.
Well, see, my thing is this. I think by far the best soundtrack, best music for any Street Fighter, and anybody who could tell you this as a fighting game fan, Third Strike. Third Strike by far had the... I mean, think about it. Even the... Okay, so the intro song was good because it was a Japanese hip hop artist, but it was.
That's
still
what I was
going
to say. Yeah, it was hip hop style, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was hip hop and drum and bass, and that's what it was. But like, you got that, and then you got Let's Get It On Now, select, make your first pick, and
exactly.
It was going by the number, and you're like, oh, this sounds jazzy. It's that new jazz hip hop.
Yeah, I always remember that had that. And it always, like, for me, it caught me off guard because I'm so used to not having like
hip hop
or any kind of like drum and bass in there. But now I remember correctly, like the menu music, like this is. You know, Street Fighter, Third Strike, like Alpha. Yeah. Like I think Alpha 3 might have. Maybe Alpha 3 did that too.
No, Alpha 3 didn't even have any.
Maybe
kind
not.
Of sound.
I can't
Only
remember. It was Third Strike. Must be Third Strike. I'm thinking of it.
Like, because the thing is, when you had the first Street Fighter 3 and then second generation or second impact, they did not have that kind of sound. They had a little bit of drum and bass, and it started to kick in on second impact. But when Third Strike came out, which was their final fix.
I think that's what it was. Third Strike. I think it was like the the version my friend had had like Third Strike and another Street Fighter on there. But I can't remember.
You're thinking about the Anniversary Collection.
That's what it was. That's why I remember that about Third Strike was like, this is weird jazz, like selection, you know,
yeah.
It's hip hop kind of selection music that no one, I think, that my friends caught was weird and strange. To me, it was like, cool.
I'll be sitting there. I wouldn't even pick a character yet. I'd be like, I'm gonna just roll with this. And then literally, I downloaded the soundtrack, and it was just it's so good. Because you have that mixture of that and drum and bass. And actually, I played a couple songs at Classic Game Fest that were like Makoto's theme.
Yeah.
Kuma's theme is like by far one of my favorites because it has that Fudo Japan kind of style, but it's drum and bass. It's a mixture of both.
Was Third Strike where they introduced Dudley? I can't remember if that was.
Dudley was actually introduced in Second Impact. He was in Second Impact. No, actually, he was in all three. He was in all three. Yin Yang and Hugo was in Second Impact. And then Makoto, and then, or no, not Makoto, sorry. It was Q. Okay. Q and a couple other characters were.
The only reason I bring it up is because the one thing I've never been able to keep straight in my head is the timeline for Street Fighter.
Yeah.
The game. And for those who have no idea why that's the case, so the first game that came out was Street Fighter. Wasn't really. I mean, it's a game. It had something, but really, there's a couple of
terrible controllers.
You know, it was almost an arcade experiment, and a good one at that. And it did what it did, and there are some elements of story in there that apply somewhere.
Yeah, but then like two completely changed the game.
Yeah, two is probably the one everyone remembers in some capacity. For the longest time, it went from 2 to then, like, the timeline goes Street Fighter 2, all the incarnations of that.
Yep.
Then Street Fighter 4, all the incarnations of that.
Well,
cuz that was the thing they said actually, was that it took place between like 2 and whatever the fuck happened after in the timeline.
Well, actually, timeline wise, Alpha's first.
Was Alpha first?
Because Alpha,
God damn it.
Alpha is first because Ken has longer hair and younger.
Okay.
Charlie's there before Guile.
Okay, so Alpha.
It's
then 2.
It's Alpha 2. It's Alpha 2. 2. It wouldn't be 4, actually.
Well, I thought 4 was. I thought that was the thing, is that this takes between. That it took place between Street Fighter 2 and whatever the fuck happened. That's why, like, certain characters are still alive or whatever. This is where it gets fucked up. This is where I get confused.
It's Alpha 2.
I can keep Mortal Kombat straight in my head. I know Johnny Cage is dead, and when Johnny Cage comes back, either A, we're in the past, or B, we've done some weird time warp bullshit.
Well, yeah, because, like, if you want
to. That at least I know.
If you want to look at it and you don't have to worry about everything, just go Mortal Kombat 9 and Mortal Kombat X, and that's it. Because you do not need to even. Well, see, you would have to do that anyway because Johnny Cage is still around and his daughter's there. But, yeah, Street Fighter, it is Alpha 2. It would actually be. Third Strike.
Is it Third Strike?
It would be Third Strike because Hugo was still there, but it would be Third Strike and then it would be 4 because it would be that. Actually, and then what you have to do is.
This is where we have to almost.
You actually have to put 5 in between 4.
Are you serious?
Before 4 and 3. Oh, it's God. The timeline is. You think that timeline's janky? Try to do a timeline with Final Fantasy.
Oh, that doesn't even count.
There is actually a.
I would not even remotely
that or Legend of Zelda.
Zelda, I have a book that I can refer to.
But
I can refer to the timeline in the book over here.
Yeah, but
I have canon. I have a canon book, my friend. I know. That I can do.
It's still tricky as hell though. You can't tell me that.
We're gonna look this up.
You're gonna look up Street Fighter chronological.
All right, this is this is according to Event Hub's the Street Fighter timeline. So it goes like this. This is this timeline according to this. Okay. Street Fighter canon only comes from the games themselves. The animes, comic books, and movies, other things have been disregarded. Okay, so fuck that. So first game is Street Fighter in the timeline.
What? It should be Alpha because
then comes Alpha 1 through 3 because apparently. Apparently, Street Fighter comes out, it starts in 1987, and Alpha 1 through 3 goes from 87 to 1990.
Okay.
The Alpha games were not actually a tournament, but a random series of fights between the Street Fighter cast members. As such, there is no official winner.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why. So Alpha 2, so that's Alpha. Then comes Street Fighter 2, all the different incarnations.
Yeah, so original Street Fighter, Street Fighter Alpha, then two.
Two, then four, then Third Strike, then and that's it. That's and then I guess five is where the fuck five takes
place. What year did that start? what date was that on?
1998 to 1999.
No, and, I mean the date of the article.
The article date is 2010.
Yeah, we got to fix that because don't forget you got five now. So.
I don't even want to know, but there's enough. Okay, here's February 1st, 2005. Street Fighter V. No, that's just. There's no one knows. There's a wiki. Someone will correct me, but that's the one thing I think frustrated me to no end was that it was never, this is just actually a really scary schedule. Because no one ever, especially when it came to Street Fighter 4. I remember that was the big selling point. Like, this happens after Street Fighter 2 and between another game. In that, the reason they did that was because I guess in Third Strike, somebody wasn't playing anymore.
Yeah.
Or someone had died that was a critical character. Something had happened where somebody that was a cool character that they couldn't market anymore, the people got mad were not, and that was not in Third Strike.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's such a weird thing to say because, if we talk about fighting games, here's the question. Out of all the people you know that play fighting games, of all your friends that played fighting games, do you think any one of them really gives a damn about the storyline in any of these fighting games?
Within certain games, yes. Because that's why Guilty Gear, for example, Guilty Gear has built up a huge story.
Well, they have a lot of side properties, too, from, mangas to animes.
Even before that, though.
I guess a good point,
They just strictly focused on story within the game, and they had, a character called That Man. Literally named That Man, and you're like,
who's That Man?
I want to know a little bit more about him. So they literally made for Zerg, they literally did a section where strictly story, you do not play at all. You literally watch an entire story of the game and what's going on. That's how deep in detail they went into it to let you know. And then now with Revelator, the second game for it, you want to continue the story, you watch the whole entire story again.
Okay, maybe that's okay. Because I've had friends of mine who, because I don't think any of my friends who play Street Fighter, love Street Fighter, adore it, play it to death, truly understand. I mean, they know certain basic story facts.
Yeah.
They know, Ken and Ryu trained under the same dude. But it's not like we talk about the Dark Hado, or was that? I don't even know.
Yeah, the Dark Hado.
Yeah. It's not like we talk about that. I mean, they'll know Akuma was the evil version of something, but they don't necessarily know all the weird intricacies and I don't think anyone knows even beyond, even hardcore fans that Cammy at one point was brainwashed and worked for M. Bison. I none of my friends, you only actually take it back.
If you play Alpha, you know.
Right. If you played one of those or you played, I can't remember which game it was that when Bison won, you'd see this you'd see Cammy come in and do a salute. I can't remember which.
That was Alpha.
Was that Alpha?
That was one of the Alpha series. Yeah. Because you didn't have Cammy in Alpha 1 and 2.
Right.
And in 2, though, she would come in whenever and she would salute. And you're like, oh, I want to play her. But she was in Alpha 2 Gold, which was in the Street Fighter collection for PS1 that they had.
Right.
But you can only play her in versus mode. You can't play her in arcade.
Well, because she's not canon. She screwed the balance 3, up.
In Alpha 3, they were like, no, you need to put Cammy in there. Because, Cammy is one of the definitive characters that you need to have in there. It's like, you can't have Kim without Ryu. You can't have Cammy without Chun-Li. They're literally family kind of thing now.
Well, because especially now and in the story, I don't know any of my friends that, even though they do mention it in the games, I don't know how many of my friends would know that Chun-Li was part of Interpol,
Well, and they do, see, the thing is they do describe some of it. And
right.
Even when you beat, if you did arcade mode and you beat it, you knew she was an Interpol. She was Interpol. Or, especially if you're looking at Alpha endings were very long and they were very deep and detailed.
Well, at that point, and I think, this is what's interesting about that game franchise, at the point when Alpha came out, let's see, I don't even think we, that was the new version of the arcades. That was because Street Fighter 2 had been in arcades for a long time. Compared to when Alpha came out,
Because you had Super Street Fighter, Super Street Fighter 2, and it actually Alpha came out, I think, 2 years after.
Because I remember correctly, I think Alpha might have been might have been the first arcade to take advantage of, like, I think it was Q-Sound was the engine that they used.
Q-Sound quality.
Right. And I remember that was, like, a big deal because you'd see that every on the marquee, like, every time you play the arcade, you start seeing all the different, like, I think they're technically called attract mode in the arcade lingo. I don't want to learn that being a MAME person.
Yeah.
In the attract mode, you see, like, presented in Q-Sound quality or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, what the fuck does that mean?
And actually, it's interesting because Q-Sound is, like, literally, it blocks off everything else.
Yeah.
It literally blocked off every other noise, and you would hear their music at the gay place. So it was really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, no, but that was the big thing was that. Yeah. And Alpha used a different engine and sort of, you know, did some slightly new. It's been such a while since I thought about what Alpha did differently.
Yeah, they were, in the Cap 3? They started moving from Cap 2 to Cap 3.
Yeah.
Which was, that's when you had Alpha. That's when you had X-Men versus Street Fighter. That's when it came out in 95.
Okay.
Because that's when PlayStation came out, but it came out in arcades in 90. Actually, came out in arcades in 94.
Yeah.
Because you had, within months, you had multiple versions of Street Fighter. And around 95, that's when PlayStation came out, but at the same time, that's when Alpha came out.
Yeah.
Warrior's Dreams. Yeah, had it on a console, but then you had arcade style too. And it was getting deeper into the story. That's what it started doing. Like, especially if you didn't, like, if you got the joke character Dan, but you knew Dan had a serious background, where it's like,
right,
I'm going after Sagat because Sagat killed my father. You know, it's like, oh, you're a joke character, but damn, that shit's serious. You know?
I always adored Dan as
I adore Dan because he was just a troll character.
Well, I love the idea of Dan more than I like Dan as a character because I'll explain why. So Dan, so we talk about this World Street Fighter as we've going down this weird pipeline. There are certain areas of martial arts in the game. I mean, there's the martial arts in general, in real life, of course.
Yeah.
But because I don't necessarily know what the style is, the people that sort of studied under the same master and sort of do the same style would be these following characters. I would say Ken, Ryu, Sakura. She can kind of do some stuff.
Well, she learns under Ken. Yeah, right. She's a Shoto character.
And I think
Akuma is a Shoto character.
Right.
Him and Goki.
Right. And I think even though technically Ken does, I think he does Taekwondo, if I'm mistaken, is the style.
If you want to count that.
Yeah, because I think he technically, like, I think he's under that. But what I loved about...
Well, they're both under the same master.
Right.
It's just one has a technique of more power,
right?
As of within fireballs, the other one has more power within uppercuts,
right? Exactly.
You know,
and Sakura's like, I want to be like Ryu,
yeah,
Ryu-san, and it's like, Dan's like, I want to be.
Well, Dan,
Dan.
What's crazy is, in the actual animations of like certain games, he was training under, Gouken,
yeah,
but. He was like, man, your stuff is garbage. I'm just going to go do this. But in the actual Street Fighter Legends Chung Lee comic book, he actually trains with his father.
What I love about Dan, and this is what I love about the character, and I learned, and I didn't really know too much about Dan until CVS2.
Yeah.
Because you start looking at the move list, or looking at this, and there's just like this ultimate attack. What the hell is this? We got to pull this off. And so, you know, what I love about that character, and it's so important because if you think about this as a game, this is a useless slot. This is a thing
by far the most useless slot, and I already know what you're talking about.
But it's just a useless thing because it doesn't. Dan is the only character, I think, in the history of fighting games, maybe not, that has a move that takes up super energy. You know, takes up bars.
Three bars.
That does absolutely. Positively nothing. It's just for show.
Yes, it's the ultimate taunt.
And it's the thing I love so much. I love that it exists because it's like this. I imagine that in deving and like people talking about certain things, and you have a, you know, if you imagine that there's a group of people at Capcom at the time this game is being made, trying to balance things, trying to figure out stuff, whatever, trying to, you know, make the moves also, you know, within that, make them within character, trying to figure out everything else. And someone says, what if we made a move that did nothing? Oh, I'm sorry, what? What if, because his character is a complete son of a bitch, is a complete asshole, and is doing, like, the thumbs up, the smiling with the twinkle in his teeth,
Bling!
It's like, what if we just gave him a move that does nothing? Do you think players would even notice? Probably not. Let's do that. And I always loved that gag. I always loved the joke because I laughed so hard at like this weird fucked up move of like sticking the butt out, doing this sort of thing. Just like, huh?
Yeah.
That's
like,
awesome.
Like, wait, why are you?
Because someone had to, and again, this is the idea always behind stuff. Someone A had to animate that. Someone had to program that in. Somebody had to do all this stuff.
And get authorization on top of
it. And everyone had to sign off on it. And again, it's like, that's the joke. I'm like, I want to meet the team that, like, I want to meet the specific guy that thought of that idea because I want to shake their hand because it is such a glorious joke that I don't think, because, like, it's not like anyone ever, well, take it back. Some people have used that in, like, tournaments, if I'm mistaken.
But, like,
They can, because, if they're, like, you know, being confident, you know, it's like you're playing Dan, like, sometimes you as the opponent, just like, just let it slide. Just let it happen.
Well, that or you're like really scared and they're baiting you that good. Where it's like, oh no, I don't know what to do. I was like, bait, roll bait. I was like, oh no, you're getting baited to death. I was like, oh, what do you do? And, well, what's really crazy is, you know why they made Dan, right?
Why did they make Dan?
Okay, so King of Fighters, you have Kyo from Art of Fighting.
I think I know what's going.
And actually, they were like, you know what? We want to make fun of SNK. So they literally made Dan the same way, where it's like, I throw a fireball, but it goes nowhere. I do an uppercut, but it's completely garbage. And it's like, literally, and they had an interview about it, like, why did you make Dan? And it was like, oh, we were making fun of Kyo. Kyo's just, I don't like the character. He's so dumb. Like, when they seen first Art Fighting, because Art Fighting,
right?
Don't get me wrong, it's a really good game, but when you start off, your fireballs are very weak, and they don't go far. They're like a quarter of the stage. So it's like, okay, but you had to train to get stronger and stronger.
Exactly.
Which was actually a unique concept in a arcade-style fighting game. But I didn't like Ryo. I didn't like Kyo either. Or not Kyo, but Ryo.
Right.
I didn't like Ryo because Ryo was weird. He got better in certain games, but he's just...
Well, the SNK has always had... Like SNK has... Because if we take Capcom, there are technically, three fighting game franchises that they develop. You know, minus any potential crossovers or anything like that. Like three core ones. We have Street Fighter. I say core loosely because some of these haven't seen another game for a long time. But we have Street Fighter series, which covers all the Street Fighters. We then have the Rival Schools /
Rival Schools, but it wasn't the problem. Was
I'm saying like certain characters of those have kind of come into other things.
Actually, not all of them. And the thing is, you can't count Rival Schools as a core.
I guess so.
Because that was literally a side.
Then I guess we only have two. We have one core and like two side projects. We have that and what's the other fucking the one with with Morgan and...
Oh, you got Darkstalkers, yes.
Yeah, Darkstalkers.
Darkstalkers was a very...
that had multiple versions. That had like one or two.
Well, you can say the Marvel one was a very heavy core base too because...
I guess so. Now it's core.
It was core in the beginning because you had Marvel Super Heroes.
I guess so, yeah.
Then you had X-Men versus Street Fighter.
Right.
You had X-Men and Children of Atom. You had all
those. Yeah, I guess,
those.
Okay.
The Versus series, which was actually
I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess that's true because that...
Yeah,
maybe this is on one of the right. Maybe that was the thing is I had so many friends of mine that because I've only like seen like screenshots of Rival Schools since I never played it. I've had so many friends who sung the praises of Rival Schools.
Trust me, I love the hell out of Rival Schools. Rival Schools is an amazing game, and Project Justice was fun too. And I wish that, and everybody really wishes that they make either Darkstalkers, another Darkstalkers,
or another Rival Schools,
or another Rival Schools. Because,
that's what I've heard. Yeah,
or a CVS3.
That was such a long. Was a long rumor that they were going to make another Darkstalkers for like the longest time.
Well, they had a petition and they signed it, and it was like, Darkstalkers is coming, and they said that we don't know when they want to finish it up and how they're going to do it. Are they going to do it 2.5? Are they going to do it? Are they going to stick with the old school or like more of a higher res kind of pixelated kind of game? What are you going to do? You know, they do have Darkstalkers Resurrection, which is 1 and 3, and it's the Japanese versions. So they're very fast-paced, strong games. But we do want another Darkstalkers. I love Darkstalkers. It was a very fun game. It was a very very footsies, heavy combo-based game, and it was just so fun.
the characters were unique. The animations, if you look at, there was a website that I used to see a long time ago that showed every detailed frame of like a person, a character getting hit, attacking. There was over 1,000 different type of animation frames. It was ridiculous.
No, it was very well. I mean, I always liked the look of that game, and I always liked the idea of a, because again, we talk about fighting games and everything sort of after a while, especially during, especially on the Japanese side. Not even, it's not a bad or good thing, but after a while, sometimes was, unless you're like really into the game, like things start to blur. Like it's hard to tell the difference unless you're like really, like remember the game that I played that I really want to get more into, because I could tell that there was something going on, but I know that I could never get my friends into this, was Blaze Blue Calamity Trigger.
We had crew members
only because Blaze Blue has like 8 different mechanics, maybe even more, just going on at any given point. I only do a glancing knowledge of playing that game. I was like, well, there's this thing here, there's a trigger, but if you use these triggers, you can use it here. So I was like, my head exploded, and I know that I could never show, friends, let's play this crazy, you know.
Yeah, crazy anime game.
Right, because you look at that game, and you're like, what's the difference between this crazy anime game and that other crazy anime game?
Yeah.
And what's different from that one to that one? And you start to look at all the, again, the Japanese one. If you look at Street Fighter, look at Blaze Blue, you look at Guilty Gear, and while, yes, there are differences, and while, yes, of course, they're thematically different and everything else, to a general audience, they kind of blur because you start to do the thing of like, which characters spawn to a quarter circle? Okay, this one does. Awesome. This one throws a fireball.
And I think a lot of people do that in a lot of fighting games in general. A lot of people that are not used to fighting games feel the same way. It's just like a lot of fighting game players that don't play FPS.
Yes.
Like, oh, this is the same first person shooter.
Yes, exactly.
But like me personally, I'm very diverse on both sides. Like, I'll play Battlefield anytime over Call of Duty because it's very deep in detail as of you got to play with a team.
Right.
You got to play smart. You, but you have a lot of things going on. Whereas, like, and I call it the oh shit moment.
Right.
And my friends are like, no, you don't happen. And like, we'll be on the mic and I'll hear them go, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Because you couldn't camp because buildings are getting destroyed. You know, you have helicopters going over you, jets, bombs hitting near the floor, and this is just a multiplayer game, and you're just sitting there like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, help me, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And you was like, how many times did you say oh shit today? And you're like, oh shit, I said it this many times, because you have a consistent moment. But
right,
for the common person that doesn't play FPS,
right,
they think it's just,
yeah, especially when it comes to those sort of like wartime, you know, like a Battlefield versus Call of Duty versus
like that.
All that stuff.
Even watching Overwatch and stuff, Overwatch and Team Fortress, people will be like,
that's sort of where I want to get to, is that what I liked about Darkstalkers was that it had a theme. It had this sort of weird sort of, you know, horror theme, you know, sort of that, but it didn't stray into like it didn't start mixing with like if you think of Guilty Gear, maybe that scary character, that weird fucked up guy, you know, but right next to him is some like, you know, very anime swinging, magical girl. And I liked about Darkstalkers kind of like said, no, we're going to keep this thematically here in this sort of weird, you know, horror style, whatever that means.
That horror style genre.
Right.
But it was still a fighter, but it was just very, like, it was the animation that gave it.
Exactly.
Its presence.
Right.
And I thought, I'd say, like, if any game, that was the game of the best frame animation presence. Like, even one of my favorite characters, BB Hood.
Yep.
You know. Walking around, every step she took, la 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 la, she literally was singing. And like, if you dash back, she screams.
Yeah,
like she's acting like she's scared. But then she had a machine gun and rocket launcher.
Yeah, she had
and
like
then a crew. Members.
Yeah, what the hell was in that basket?
Yeah, like a basket, or she throws out a
basket
cape
of goodies.
And a cape comes out with full of crew members, big swole dudes, rocket launchers.
I forgot about that.
The best super ever. Like, you know, it was those moments, but it was the animations. It was that flow that made every character unique in their own style. And from watching from the view of somebody else playing, you're like, oh, what game is that? And I'd say, as of like a 3D fighting game, that caught presence with that was Tekken.
Yeah,
it was the same way.
Well, the funny thing about, and if you take Tekken, like, because we could say the two, I mean, granted, there are, you know, if we talk about 3D fighting games, I mean, the earliest one I remember was Battle Arena Toshinden.
Oh, I got Battle Arena. Battle Arena
Thundering. And I mean, it was not, like, I remember that was during.
Soundtrack was still good.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, for sure. Because I remember that was during the day, the days. This is how far back that was.
Well, Tekken came out at the same time, too.
Well, no, when Battle Arena Toshinden came out for the PlayStation, for me, my memory of that game was because every time this is what it was. My friends and I would rent a PlayStation 1, not buy, but rent one.
Oh,
that would be the game that came with it.
Oh, well, I bought me a PlayStation.
No,
it came out on my birthday.
Oh, okay.
Which is by far the coolest thing ever. I was like, yes.
If you think, like, as of right now, and this is not to say that there aren't other ones out there, but as of right now, I'd say the two main 3D fighters are Soul Calibur or Soul Edge or whatever the Soul franchise.
Yeah.
I don't even want to refer to it because it's, you know, that. And the Tekken franchise.
Actually, for you, that's for you. Me.
There's probably other ones out there, too.
Me, it's actually going to be, even though there's Soul Edge or Soul Blade, Virtual Fighter.
Okay, that's right.
Tekken.
Yeah.
Because those are always the two that clashed.
Well, because the thing I always liked about Tekken, and this is sort of what it was, because Virtual Fighter to me was such just like, very much like the prototype version, because I know we've since gone beyond that.
Oh.
What I always liked about Tekken, because even technically we forgot to mention like the Dead or Alive franchise. That
you got DOA.
Fighter.
Yeah, you got DOA.
But what I always liked about Tekken, and I always appreciate about Tekken, because if you think about the one thing I always liked about like Street Fighter or something like that, were that there were technical 2D fighters.
Yeah.
That they had this, and it's not to say there's any technicality in any other fighters. It's just if you're in a fighting kind of game. Where if you hit the button at the right time, at the right frame, and you're counting frames, if you're playing a game that, like, it's HD version of its older buddy, you know, the Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, has options in there to flip off, like, all right, Chun-Li's action stops 4 frames sooner than the, like, if you're getting that technical in the fixes, it's a technical fighter. You know, you're not thinking of that.
Yeah. Well, actually, Virtual Fighter 5 is 10 times more technical,
No, for sure, and that's the case, but what I always appreciate about Tekken versus Soul Calibur, and it's not to say that, again, not say that there's not technical stuff.
Yeah.
Tekken, to me, always came off as a more technical 3D fighter. Like, to the point where you had a character that could do different moves depending on what stance you went into. Yeah. And that always, like, fascinated me of, like, oh, crap, if I, you know, you can chain these certain stances. I think it was, like, was it Law or Lei? I always forget which one
it was. It was Lei.
Lei.
Lei Wulong.
Where you could, like, you know, you go, like, one stance, and you do this sort of action. You go another stance and do this. And you had to do that before you even began to do any kind of combos.
Yeah.
Before you even thought about doing stuff, you had to, like, get into a stance, chain into another stance, do something else, and, like, work this, like, essentially, like, you know, do this very technical thing. Whereas I always felt in Soul Calibur, and though, again, there is technicality, there's strategy in Soul Calibur for sure, you could kind of button Master Cervantes and be okay, fine.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's where I say... Virtual Fighter actually has more technical.
Okay.
It's more technical than Tekken is. And the reason why is because they actually have legit stances, and there are more stances in that game.
Oh, okay.
For certain characters. Like,
I gotcha.
When you play Lei Fei, the monk, he has literally 20 different stances, and all stances do different style combos.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And, for example, Vanessa, the bodyguard, she's an MMA fighter, but she has defense stance where she goes low. And then you have normal stance where she's up. Defense stance, you go low, you can poke quicker, and you can actually, any punches, it automatically parries. So, in that, you have that. Jackie has, like, every character pretty much has a different stance compared to, like, Tekken. Tekken, yes, like, you have Lei Wulong that has, like, a stance here and there. You have, you know, Murdoch that has a stance. But every character within Virtual Fighter has more stances. And actually... They go off of weight. So if you're heavy and you get launched, you fall faster.
Oh, interesting.
If you're light, you get launched. Yeah, you launch higher in the air.
And you fall. Okay, wow, interesting.
And see, so they go, like, and I love Virtual Fighter because that game is detailed. Like, especially if you play Shun.
Yeah.
Dragon Master, the more you drink, the powerful you are. But if you get ground pounded or get hit real hard, you lose drinks because you're not. Sick. It's not getting out of your system.
He's sobered up.
Yeah, you do, and that's the crazy thing. Yeah, like, he's not bad without drinks, but he's better with drinks. And it shows that bar.
Like if he gets 10 drinks in, be careful because he's quicker actually, because he can dodge things quicker and he can do more combos better. And it's technical to the teeth.
No, that makes sense. Okay, and I guess I had not. I
was just saying watch a tournament and just look at it. You don't have to be too technical in it. Just watch it and see the magic, and you'll see the difference.
Because I had not played, and that might be it. Because I had not played enough. I have not played enough Virtua Fighter to judge. That's why I kept thinking those two, because Virtua Fighter to me exists. And I always remember that because again, I think the two major ones are those, but that's just because I guess the crowd I hung around.
Well, yeah, and I understand it because the first one was the same way. Well, the first one was like Tekken, where it's like, all right, let's test it out and see how it is.
Yeah.
But when two came around, that was like everything changed. Started. Yeah, that's when you had Shun. He wasn't a drunken master, but he still had that style. He had different movesets. And then you had Lion. Lion was the same way, where he had his little tiger style and he would switch every once in a while. So they started upgrading the characters each time. And the producer, if you watch the biography of the producer that made that game,
right,
it's actually really cool because he actually goes into the mocap sections and actually teaches them actual karate moves, like judo and stuff like that.
Interesting.
It's really good. It's a really good documentary. I would say check it out.
I'll have to check it out.
It should be on YouTube, and it's very interesting.
I'll find it because I didn't realize that. I mean, it makes sense he did a lot of mocap for that kind of game.
Yeah, but like for Virtua Fighter, he kept it serious. He was like, yeah, this is what you should do when you act. This is what really happens if your arm gets like bent over in this kind of way. This is how you'll get tossed if you're doing judo. You know, this is how you'll get hit when, like, because three, they stopped doing like fantasy jumping where it was jumping real high.
Yeah.
And they started getting to where it was like
real jumping.
Real jumping. Yeah. This is how high you can jump. Yeah.
That makes sense, especially if, you know, I mean, and I guess as tech has kind of evolved, that's sort of what happens to those 3D fighters.
Yeah, like Tekken 3 stopped doing high jumps after.
Yeah.
Actually, after Tekken 3. Tekken 3, that's when you only do short jumps. You couldn't do high jumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you were a devil.
Right. But it made sense because, and again, if you think about now we're talking about mocap, where mocap's, you know, it's pretty much the default. Like, I bet you at this point in time, you know, those kind of fighting games get, like, guys who are actually in that style of fighting.
Yeah.
Put a couple of, you know, mocap balls on them and start, you know, trying to figure out how to get that, actual throw, you know, get, you know, higher masters to be in a mocap room and like, all right, do a judo throw, you know, and
that's what they do. And like I said, it was really good because it was a Virtua Fighter 5 one that I watched, and I was watching a mocap, and the director literally walked in and he's like, oh yeah, let me show you. He just literally did a judo, like dropped him and put him in an arm bar. And it's like, that's how you should do it. Make sure you do it that way. And he was being nice about it, but it was like,
yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
Right, because
the director knows what to do, and he's like,
well, that's good. No, that's good to have, especially for that kind of thing, because, again, for me, I always viewed those, you know, now knowing a Virtua Fighter, I would feel the same way, but I always viewed Tekken, like I said, as this sort of technical kind of game where if you're going to make a 3D fighter, you know, and you want to make appeal to that crowd, because, again, for me, I always like 2D fighters because they became more technical.
Yeah.
But I always appreciated Tekken being this like very highly technical kind of game where you weren't throwing on fireballs, you weren't, you know, doing
and like I said, it is regardless, it's still a very technical game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Oh yeah.
It's just like when you try to compare the two, Virtua Fighter wins like
in the technical area.
It's like Street Fighter and Guilty Gear.
Yeah.
Like Guilty Gear is very technical compared to Street Fighter.
Yeah, no, agreed. Agreed.
Street Fighter, don't get me wrong, there's still you're still very technical.
Right, and when I say that, because I know a lot of people are going to scream at me saying, well, there's technicality in everything. There's stuff you can do in either. There's technical fighting in Smash Brothers.
Well,
and there is.
Yeah.
There is for sure. But it's a matter of, it's the idea of when you design, and again, this is coming from the dev side of me. It's when you design a game and you look at a game on a design level, you know, not just as a, like a fun kind of game, a balance level, but a design level in that. And you think of whenever you see a game, like I said, like Blaze Blue was what we mentioned thing.
Yeah.
If you ever see a game where there are technical levels of that, if you see a game where there's like 50 different things going on, chances are that was designed as this technical fighter game for a certain crowd. It may not be your crowd. It probably was more of like, this is for the Evo crowd.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean that there aren't technicalities in, you know, that the Evo crowd can look at when it comes to Smash Brothers. It just means that when Smash Brothers happens, I can play the game and I can invite a friend to play a game who has no idea what's going on. Like, in other words, the idea behind a Tekken Fighter is that it's almost intimidating kind of game to some people.
Well, see, it is a party game first.
Yes.
But now it has became a fighter.
Right.
It was a very it was the longest debate in probably fighting game history of is Smash a fighter or not? Because
I think what I like about Smash is that it's an approachable fighter. And I think that's something that some fighting games kind of forget, that they have to approach new crowds and new people.
It is to a certain extent. And the only reason why I say this is because it is very approachable for the fan base, the fans. Yes. So, like, you got Mega Man in there. You got Pac-Man in there.
I say it's approachable because you can set it up. Yeah, you can set up in, like, crazy pro level, just like Final Destination or, like, now in the Wii U version.
Yeah.
Every level now has a Final Destination-esque kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or B, you can do what I do and say, fuck it, we're going to go crazy mode, all items on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, let the RNG be in your favor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no way fans are butts about that. That's what I'm saying. I always thought
personally made it more fun to have random items. Just like, I got the hammer. Oh, crap, the handle fell, the head fell off. Bam. Screw your hammer.
That's what I'm saying. That is definitely a fun. That's what makes it a party game.
Right.
Because that is a party-based game.
Right.
But, like, saying if you do get into the fighter style, the fighter side of that, Smash is...
Oh, no, and I think that's why I like...
Not friendly.
No, I say friendly being that, you know, like, Blaze Blue, and I keep putting Blaze Blue just because it's the one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Is a hard game to introduce a person who is new to fighting games.
Well, you can
show it to them, and it looks pretty, and looks cool anime. But if you are as a skilled player, you know, that knows kind of all the systems, you can kind of run over somebody.
Well,
it sort of, you know, feels weird.
Well, this is the thing that they did that they fixed a lot of issues with a lot of fighters. They have a challenge mode or a tutorial mode, and a lot of fighting games have did this, where they do a tutorial mode and give you the aspect of how the game works in its own technicality. So, to make it very detailed in gaming, like one game that I started getting back into, used to be a pain in the ass for me, but I still love it. King of Fighters.
Yes,
King of Fighters is, if you want to look at the most technical game, that is a technical fucking game, because number one, doing combos to cancel into combos, to do supers to cancel into supers.
Yeah, no, you know, SNK had a lot.
Have the craziest mechanics.
SNK and KO have always had a lot of that shit on lockdown.
But the thing is it's like, all right, let me do a combo. Like, for example, KOF 13. KOF 13 is a fun game, but it is very technical heavy, and it is very picky with how you do your controls. Because if you do it wrong, you ain't getting a combo out of there.
Oh, man.
Now, 14's coming out. They actually fixed that. They made it a little looser, a little easier to do supers, like supers into combos into specials, anything like that. But it still has its, you know,
right,
very technical, like short jump, short hop, dash short hop and stuff like that. But that game, trying to introduce players, like especially back in the day, it was hard to introduce people to KOF because
it's this very daunting kind of game.
Yeah. But the thing is, you have hardcore KOF fans, and I love KOF games. I love King of Fighter games. They're fun because you have multiple styles of picking teams.
I think that's what I say as like intro. I don't mean, because again, if you get intro to something, and then while Smash is a fun game and I enjoy the heck out of Smash, you know, that's sort of your gateway drug, your taste. Here's your friendly taste of a game. Look, Mario's in there.
Oh, yeah.
Luigi's there. You can look, Link's there. Link's, you like Link? I love Link.
That's what I'm saying.
You like this game too. You like that Ryu character. Ryu's cool. Let me show you this other game called Street Fighter, you know, Street Fighter 4. Look at all these other things. Like, oh, wow, you like that too. It's great. Let me introduce you to Guilty Gear. And then because of it, the Smash being a very approachable game. I say approachable meaning that there's not a whole lot of button. You know, like if you think about a fighting game.
Yeah.
You know, SNK always had, at least for the longest time, because they were Neo Geo games, always had sort of four buttons. You had four button layout. Street Fighter had a six button layout.
Yeah.
And that, if you think about Smash, they're about, you could probably have just three buttons, maybe just two. Two would work. That's what the Wii version had, only two. You know, if you think about it, you have a block. You have block.
Your punch, which you would have four buttons.
Would you have four buttons? Let's see.
Yes, because you have super.
B, right.
Yeah, B, A, R.
I guess, yeah. I mean, well, okay, four buttons, but maybe a little less. It always felt like there was a lot less going on.
The reason why I say the C button, because you use C. Instead of doing like forward smash, you would do boom. You would use
right,
boom.
But some people don't. Some people did the four. You know, did the
well. A lot of heavy players use C.
Yeah, I always use C.
Yeah, because C is a quicker way to do smash attacks.
Yeah.
Instead of forward A, because sometimes you slip. And
mess
up.
Yeah, I always did C. My friends would always do the charge one and everything else. But regardless of that, this is not to say that there's not strategy within that. You know, sometimes your simplest games have the most strategy involved in them.
Yeah.
But it's approachable. It's a game that you can say, well, what do I do? Just hit this button. This button will do this. This button will do this. And this button will do this.
Yeah.
And that there's still complexity within that simplicity of a system. Like even if you think about like the game that boils that down to its like, you know, reduced soup would be like Dive Kick, where there's like literally one hit, one button, you know. Yeah. But there's still complexity and strategy within.
I would say actually Persona's one, because Persona had the A button combo system, and actually King of Fighters actually just introduced that because they're working with Atlas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they have the A button, they have the light punch button combo system that does the whole entire combo and a super for you. So it's like
that seems. Cheat it.
Well, no, it's for those is to bring in the introduction.
Oh, okay,
the newer players.
I guess a good point.
Because the problem is, like I said, KOF.
I guess you turn that off when you play like tournament.
Well, no, it'll stay in there. But the way it works is this.
How does it work? Okay.
Okay. So if you never play Persona, Persona, you don't turn it off either. It's automatically stays in there.
Okay.
So, but with Persona though, you can probably use your light punch here and there, like one, two jab. Like if you do standing punch. Five times, it'll do a full combo.
Interesting.
But if you do low jab, it's just low jab.
Right.
It won't do anything else. So the thing is, advanced players, they use jab here and there just to poke, but they'll use all their other buttons besides jab.
Right.
To do combos and to get in the link. You might use like jab to keep the combo going and then continue on from there on out. Other than that, you won't use it on it. You won't just mash jab all the time.
Right.
But that was four players that like Persona and never knew about and never played a fighting game. And it's like, oh, well, you have this button that could do all the combos for you. There you go. But yeah, there you go. You got a game. It's just but they sold well. Persona sold that game sold well.
Yeah, I guess
because
a good point.
Your fans and you had your fighting game players.
I guess at the end, that's all that matters. All, I mean, you know, if you want to keep a game alive, you got to sell it. So
But with that, there are certain games, like even Marvel vs. Capcom 3 has that.
If you had all the buttons, or if you had all the buttons, you do super.
Well, you had Stylish, or not Stylish, I'm thinking of, actually, BlazBlue had it too, where you had Stylish, where you can do easy mode, and then you had easy mode for Marvel vs. Capcom 3, where
they even took the Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and even simplified it more when they put out the the game that they put Street Fighter versus it was on the Wii and it was a bunch of
Tatsunoko versus Capcom. Tatsunoko,
right, because they reduced that control scheme even further.
That was reduced real low, and I love the game. Actually, I was actually trying to find a copy of Tatsunoko versus Capcom because I still got a Wii at the house, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know what, I want to play that game because I like Cashner was
right
in that game.
Because it was all the weird Japanese properties. And like Ultraman was Ultraman.
Well, yeah, it was all the Tatsunoko.
Right, exactly.
You had G-Force.
Force, right.
Cashner, you had Karas.
Right.
Karas was broken because Karas had infinite combos all day. Zero was just as worse because Zero had infinite combos. And then you had Mega Man Legends version.
Yeah.
You had Mega Man You had Mega Man Legends version, which was awesome. And then you had Alex, which Alex was awesome just for the sheer fact that he can stun gun headbutt a mech, and it would put it in stun.
literally, like, watch the video of that, of him stun gunning headbutt that, and there was the lighter man, the dude that's like a golden lighter. He will get on top of his head and stun gun headbutt him, and it will stun him. I was like,
that's awesome.
Oh, you are so awesome, Alex, in this game. Why is it so fun?
God, I forgot. Because I remember that game existed, and it was like this weird thing for me because I only knew so much about that other property. Like, yeah. I only knew about, like, okay, I know Ultraman. I know these sort of things like that. And,
yeah.
But I always remember that.
Tekken Man, too. Tekken Man.
There's a lot of, again, it's
a lot of tussles.
But the one thing I remember was they really, like they had simplified it for Capcom for Marvel's Capcom 3. They simplified it to a certain degree.
Yeah.
They really simplified the heck out of it.
Well, because the arcade version, it was like four button. Well, it was the old Marvel style four button.
Yeah.
It was the same way, four button. But, and you did have one assist button. So you had a five button scheme. And it was simplified. It was actually easier. And they had Batsu.
Yeah.
Batsu was a beast in that game because I would do Batsu combos all day. they made it simplistic for people to get into it. Only reason why people didn't get into the game was because they had it on Wii.
Yeah.
And that was, like, probably Capcom's worst decision to do. I mean, not you could have kept it on Wii, but you could have did it on the other
I was always – I always wondered –
I was salty about that.
Well, because that was the one thing I always wondered why. Like, I mean, it had to be some type of deal. It had to be something. It had to be some type of, like –
I don't know what it was.
Because it wasn't, you know, I don't know. This is where it gets weird. This is where I get conspiracy theory because it's roughly was the exact same engine as Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah.
It had a very similar vibe.
And don't forget, this came out before Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
I know. Yeah, it was very similar vibe. It had nothing, there was nothing weird different. I always wondered, like, why. Why is this the one that's on the Wii? Like, and only on the Wii. Like, what makes this, what?
Oh,
you know,
no.
There was nothing, I'll put it this way, there was nothing uniquely Wii about it. In that I mean that.
Yeah,
you could buy the collector's edition that came with arcade sticks. Like, it wasn't like you bought the game and it was like, use the motion controls to do whatever.
No. We were like, no, we needed the arcade sticks.
Right. There was nothing inherently, you know, tied to that Nintendo platform at the time that needed.
And that's the reason why that game died pretty quickly, just because you put it on a Wii.
Yeah, it's just a very straight, and only on the Wii. And
only
again,
on the Wii, yeah.
And again, not to say that the Wii didn't sell well. See, the Wii, you know, is one of the best-selling consoles to come out in a long time.
Yeah.
But...
You,
it's not the typical fighting game.
No, it's for Smash. It is not for, like, Street Fighter.
Right, and that's what it was such a weird thing. When it came out, I was like, because even when Smash came out, it's like, you could plug in your GameCube controllers. Everyone fucking plugged the GameCube controllers in. Unless you only had two or three.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, we need another controller here. You take the Wii stick.
Like, yeah, and you're like,
I did that one time. I was like, because I remember one time we played,
Brawl.
Brawl. When Brawl came out, I was like, you know what? I want to try every control scheme because they exist. Let me try with the nunchuck. No, I never did it again. I said, we're not. Give me a cube controller. We're done with this.
Yeah,
we're moving on.
Yeah.
Because it just it did not.
It's terrible.
It's very terrible. Hyper terrible.
Yes, it's terrible.
But I always wondered why the Capcom did that too, because it's such a weird thing.
I don't know. And I was like, because I wanted that game on PS2. I was like, oh yeah, cool. And it was like, nope.
It makes, but it one, that game in particular is like, there's nothing, and I say this again, there was nothing inherently tied to the Wii.
No.
It wasn't like, again, motion controls. It wasn't like this. It had it been contractual, but I don't know what fucking contract would, like, who would sign that? Like,
yeah.
You can make this game, but it can only be on the Wii. It's like, what property? Because it's not
and
like
it
Capcom
was, like,
was.
And it was, you know, it came out on arcades first before it came out on the Wii.
I don't. It's such a weird thing. Maybe they didn't want to.
I don't know.
Maybe I'm gonna take a shot in the wind because we're pretty much out of time. Maybe it was because it was such a Japanese game that they. I don't know. None of that makes sense. I tried to figure it out. I tried to fuss out the reason because it was. I mean, maybe they were scared it was going to get views for Marvel. I don't know. Why would they be scared? It's not like maybe a parent might actually buy it, but it's not like a kid's be like, who's this weird guy? Oh, look, Spider-Man.
yeah, right. But there wasn't even no Spider-Man in there, so
right. I'm just saying, like if you compare it to Marvel's Capcom 3 or whatever, you know, or whatever, because there's I'm trying to figure out why because it's such a weird.
No, you can't.
It was that one.
Well, I got two questions for you, real quick.
Sure, ask away.
What was your favorite thing about Classic Game Fest?
So, honestly, let me think. I'm going to say one, the music. I've always liked the bands. I always like hearing new stuff, and that's always a pleasure.
Including my 20-minute set.
including your 20-minute, like, where I made the joke, because, again, I made this joke because only I can make this joke to you.
Yes.
Was like, I made the joke because I'm like, we talked about this. So it's like, you take a request, and I know you gave me that look of like, what the fuck is this guy doing? I'm like, I'm actually gonna give a real request because I really wanted to hear that damn song because I couldn't remember. I every time I hear it, I was like, fuck, I gotta remember that name of that damn song, the Godzilla thing, and write it down. And so I may have to ask it again so I can write it down.
For you. I will send you the track.
Though. Okay, because it's a good track. It's a damn good track because I recognize not only like the hip hop in front of it, but I know that's like, that's from the second Godzilla game in the NES.
Yes,
like,
sir.
You know, the battle sequence. I know exactly what that's from. And even then, I always like the track in general because it's a Godzilla track. It's talking about Kaiju. It's actually a really good hip-hop song in general.
Yeah.
And two, I think I enjoyed a lot of the vendors this time go around felt more appropriate.
Yeah.
And I say that because, I mean, this is the weird part. Because I told a friend of mine we're going in there. I said, it's a cross between an anime convention and something way cooler.
Yes,
because
it was the two best of both worlds.
Well, because and not to say anything bad, but I always feel like the anime specific vendors are sort of out of place at Classic Games Fest.
I think
I know they sell money, and I know that they're there.
No, well, see, I think they don't. That's the thing, because okay. And this is just me going to plenty of conventions. I've been to conventions where it's very comic based, and then you'll get like three or four anime vendors. They'll actually sell more than the comic book, main comic book vendors.
Right.
And it's because you get something unique that you don't get with,
I guess, a good point.
With the other art, other groups. So, like, a buddy of mine found a scouter, and he's like, he had a, my buddy David that does photography, awesome guy. He was walking around with his Saiyan shirt on, like the Vegeta jacket, and then walking around. And he's like, dude, I see like three or four people with the scouter. He's like, where's that? I was like, see the big section with the wall scrolls?
Yeah.
Go over there.
The only anime thing
yeah.
here.
The really cool old guy.
Yeah,
that was
it was a cool store. I've seen them before.
Yeah,
things.
Really nice. They were selling the scouter for $10.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that makes sense.
Boom. He's like, yeah, sold. Give me that.
$10,
Give me $10. And like, and a lot of other vendors and stuff is like, oh, man, I want that. That's real cool. Like $30, $40. Don't get me wrong. I understand you're trying to make your money, but it's like if they're going to go to that anime section for it, it's going to be it's cheaper. It's the things that I like, and it's actually pretty good product. It's not terrible. So,
but yeah, I did enjoy a lot of the video game vendors and stuff like that. Sure, you know, you start getting the collector area of things and stuff. And
yeah, I was actually very happy for my. And this is me talking about myself. I know I actually enjoyed my after party just because I'm happy that everybody.
Oh,
had
but
a blast.
The after party. The thing is, I don't. Like it's such a weird thing because I that was my favorite thing too, but I don't count that as like a CGF specific thing. Like to me, it almost felt
it
like
was
a,
actually it was. It was
I know it was
CGF.
Legit, I realize that. I realize it's on that. I realize all this. The only reason I say I don't count it because it felt like the, like I'll put it this way, Classic Game Fest, has always been and always will be a very, very family friendly event.
Oh yeah, my after party was not family. we get a, I can tell you that. Hold up, that's why I say the after party was my like one of my favorite things is because
it was not family friendly. We're at a
okay,
hookah
so
lounge.
What are yeah what yeah what are well
let's start with part
beer,
one to be a hookah lounge
beer hookah lounge. Beautiful ladies, yes. And grown folks singing about the most craziest stuff like our buddy of ours, oh my. Funniest guy, he's hilarious. He he did a song called "The Unlock Code."
Yes,
I'm not sure if you were still there.
I might have headed out because I was like,
okay, so you headed out at the time. So this unlock code, the unlock code song is him, 1UP, and Armas.
Oh, great!
Right, they're all dancing, and the unlock code is up, up, down, down, left, right, select, start.
Right,
that's a chorus, but they look like three Chippendale dancers. Oh, so we had some girls and their dudes come in, and they're getting ready to sit down in the seat. Well, the song starts playing, they start doing it, right? And the girls that was in the corner on the other side peeped their heads out like, ooh, ooh, they could dance. Ooh, they look sexy, right?
Right.
And I'm seeing it in my eyes. I see over there, they're looking, and they start recording.
Oh, no.
Their boyfriends are like, no, move back over here. You're with me. They were getting so freaked out. But like this, right when the song got done, they left. Because it was getting like they were like, ooh, I'd rather go with that guy. and actually, we had some couple girls in front of us. They were recording it, like, woo! They were throwing money around. I'm like, oh my god, this is a great after party. But but I mean, overall, it was just fun,
right? And that's why I enjoyed that. But like I said before,
that was a grown folks. That you know, was grown
this
folks
is this
fun.
Is this is like again, this is the grown folks party. This is this is the after party. And while yes, it has classic Game Fest attached to it. That's why I said
it's 18 and up.
Yeah, yeah. CGF is so. I mean, and I'm happy that it is. Do not get me wrong. I think it being family friendly is amazing.
Yes, it is.
You know, because the more people that come, the better. And the more families that come, the better. But it's like, man, I'm wondering how. Like, because I'm like, you know, thinking of like, oh, Vince is gonna be playing. Oh wait, that's gonna cut like half the songs off his set.
No, no, I had plenty of songs. It's just I wanted to introduce my music, and that's what it was. It was like, oh, yeah, you got a 20-minute set. I was like, okay, cool. That's fine. That's fine with me. I even told David, I was like, hey, I'll play intermission throughout the entire day. And he's like, don't overwork yourself. And he goes, if it's solid, it's solid. I'm like, nah, can't do that. You want to have music going on so your people that are listening like, ooh, that's awesome, and then see who the next band is.
Yeah.
And that's what it worked because I was playing music, and like I played Persona Q music, and and one of my friends is like, yeah, even though they had to do sound check and they turned it down. They did, not me. He's like, boo. He's just yelling at me. He's yelling at me. I'm like, it's not me turning it down. Do you see my hands anywhere touching the stuff? But
that's awesome.
I mean, yes, the music was great. I loved it. I loved meeting some of the new people. Nights and Around was amazing.
Yeah.
Speedrun was good too. Speedrun, Nights and Around. Killer was cool in the morning. it was very interesting because somebody was like, all right, if you had me sit over there by Killer one more time and I hear all this music that's been playing the same song for about 5 hours, we ain't doing that this next year. I'm like, not going to say who it is, but it was hilarious. But like I said, overall, everybody got along. I think Killer, because it was a family group. That was
right.
The daughter and then the mother and father.
Yeah.
And them two must have hooked up at a rave somewhere back in San Antonio in 95 because they literally were rave dancing all day. I was like, oh, yeah, y'all hooked up. That's how y'all had her, huh? Okay, I see how it is. I wasn't the only one thinking that, all right? But it was cool, though. It was hilarious. But like I said, Classic Game Fest was amazing. I'll ask
the counter thing. What didn't you like about Classic Game Fest? You think could be improved, especially being on the other side of the ooh, sphere? Like okay. I'm the audience goer. I have thoughts or whatever, but you're on the back end. And this is not to say anything. This is not to say that it wasn't a great event. It was an amazing event.
Yeah, it was.
Just to be like, what could have been?
What could be fixed?
Everything could be fixed. Anything could be improved.
Well, and like just discussing about this when we were before the recording. First thing that needs to be done is panels need to be upstairs.
Yes.
And not in anywhere in that area. Even though we're getting the whole room next year, which will be amazing, awesome, you still need to put that panel upstairs because they are going to lose some music regardless. Even with the bigger room, the echo is still going to flare from the wall back over here to where they're at, and it doesn't matter. Also, I would say you would need to give them a little bit more room for the music scene, so we don't have guys like the random like mystery box guy that came and kept yelling at me, telling me to turn it down,
turn that music down. I can't sell my mystery boxes.
Like, yeah, turn it down.
I sold at RTX a couple weeks ago. Yeah, a couple months ago.
Like turn it down so you can get mad. And he was getting mad at me. That was like my only gripe.
Right.
Other than that, everything else was fun. Everything was smooth.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Like I said, the only thing that I could say I had a painful moment was just I was standing up for 20 hours. If you include the after party.
Yeah.
And both days of CGF, about 20 hours straight and then like a little bit of time to lay down. But it would, like I said, it was still fun.
If I were to improve anything more, because I thought it was a cool addition to where the band area was. Maybe more tables. Because that was a weird thing. Because I'm so used to like this open sort of thing and seeing like, oh, tables, seats. That would be cool to have more there.
Yeah. I think what that see the thing is they're gonna fix that. They should be able to fix that when they do get that bigger space. Because when they did have the tables and stuff, the table stuff was remaining for Pixel Bar.
Yeah.
Pixel Bar took over. Shout out to Pixel Bar.
No, awesome. I thought they did a great job. To be honest, all the tournaments that happened were pretty smooth.
Yeah, yeah. William's really good at that. He I'm happy to bring some games for the after party as well. Everybody was having a blast with Gang Beasts. Such a goofy game.
They had everything like all the. I mean, they had some classic stuff, but they had like a lot of the new, which I didn't. I was amazed they had some newer games.
Yeah,
there,
he always has a ton of indie games.
Yeah,
which actually next on the 20th he has his show. They had that other event coming up.
Where is that at?
I know it's at a brewery.
Okay.
So it's going to be some...
I'm going to have to look it up because I saw... He gave me a flyer, so I have the flyer somewhere.
Well, I got it on Facebook, so I can...
Okay. I'll try to go.
I'm going to try to go, too, because I have to do... And this is just for a friend. I have to do a quinceañera. I have to do that quinceañera on the 20th. So I'm like, okay, I'll do that. That's fine. But...
Yeah, William is really good at when he sets up games and gets it ready. He sets it up and gets it ready, and he busts his ass. And he did an amazing job. I'm happy that he did come to this year's CGF, and I hope he's there next year.
I also too.
Arcades for Home, I always see them all the time.
Oh yeah,
so.
they're everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. But the guy actually stays here in Austin, so it's really cool. And
oh really? I didn't realize. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. That might make why I see him all the time, like RTX or at
RTX PAX. He was at PAX previous year. And over here,
that makes sense if he's here in Austin. I didn't realize Arcade for Homes is here.
Yeah. And it's cool. Yeah, he brought a ton. He brought a ton of arcades. He did, and then it was him and pinballs.
Pinballs, there were some machines.
Yeah, them. And so I was playing. I got to play some early in the morning before everybody else got there. So
right.
I got my fix of games before I had.
Well, because like for me, a lot of it is like I typically will walk around. I've always enjoyed. You know, the artist alley, and so I'm glad there's been a lot more artists these past couple years.
I'm happy Color Kid came through. I'd seen him at, I met him first at Nerd Cave this recent year.
Okay.
And he actually has picked up a lot of new art that he did, and it was really nice. He sold some, and he's happy that he was there. Had a blast. So.
Yeah. I'm definitely excited for next year. I kind of wish, if I were to give one critique, I don't know how you would do it, but if I were to give one critique, and only because maybe add an extra day, like a Friday, only because
it's tricky to do.
I know that, and I realize the only reason I bring it up is that typically if I think of all the other conventions I've been to,
yeah,
it's typically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But I also understand that Friday is usually the dead day for certain things, and I get why they do Saturday and only Sunday.
Well, especially within July.
Yeah,
it's
no, no, and I get all the all this is like, I wish there was another day, just nothing more that I could experience it for another day. But then I go, well, that's what Sunday's for, and it's. I because again, like 25, I think it's like $25 was like the wristband for both days. That's a fucking steal.
Yeah,
and it's still a steal for what you get and what access you get.
I think there was only one year that it was they had their highest, and it was 2 years ago where it was like 40.
Right,
but it was because they were in a smaller room and they were trying to get everybody in as quick as possible.
Yeah,
and it was 40, but it was like early bird was like 15, and then it was 40 from there.
Yeah,
after that. This year was like early bird 20. If you don't get it there, it's 25. You know, it was still it's the biggest steal out of any kind of convention. I tell people, I'm like, $25.
Yeah, it's go. Nothing. Yeah, it's not. It's totally worth it. I mean, it's like, such a. And again, next year it being bigger makes me more excited because I'm curious who will kind of come along and.
I want to see who's going to be on the panel and stuff. Because I would like to. Budget my day around some of the stuff.
Because I want to see some of the... I didn't realize what... Like, maybe that's the next thing I'd say, other critique. If you put the panels upstairs, you know, that might be better off because I'll know where the panels are because I didn't realize until walking around, like, oh, shit, there's this panel area. Because I want to see Warren Spector talk. Like,
yeah, yeah. And
like Warren Spector's like a gaming god.
Yeah, and I got to see him early in the morning. We were chatting and we were talking because he was looking for some games and I was looking...
looking around too. And so we just chatted for a little bit. And I was like, oh, yeah, Warren Spector, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm just going to be the DJ for the week. I probably won't. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't want to be like freaking out. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I probably won't get to see you speak. I would love to, but, you know, I'll be over here DJing for the whole entire day. So it was good meeting you, you know, and we just chatted for a little bit. That was awesome. You know, that was another cool thing that happened. It was but also one of the things that it sucks. I couldn't go, you know, for me, I can't go see him because that's my job. And it's not a bad thing. I never look at it as a bad thing.
No, no. Like, again, you know, even on any convention, you're going to see everything, you know, no matter how many days you have. But especially if you're working it, like, it's even worse.
Like PAX. PAX South, I couldn't. There was like 90 things I wanted to go do. And I'm like, I can't do none of these because they're clashing into one or the other. It's like flip a coin or we have to fight for it, or we split up and you go do your thing, I go do my thing.
Right.
You know?
But as it gets bigger, as more space is acquired, as more people come, things will start to happen where there's panel
definitely.
You know, it's getting there. Again, this is only that. It's amazing that this was only the ninth year, and to think that it began literally in, you know, most cons that size don't say, oh, what was your beginning convention size like?
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, we're like a hotel ballroom or something.
Yeah.
Most of the, no, we began literally in the parking lot of one of our stores.
I know, right? Yeah, we started from here. Like, and you know what's crazy? Yeah, like how you say it was a steal for that price. I just looked up Anime Overload this weekend's anime convention. It's $40.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to spend $40.
Yeah, I don't want
to. I don't want to spend, and I heard last year, and this is just from friends, Anime Overload last year was not that good.
No, and that's like for me, the badge I probably spend the most money on is RTX, but RTX is an entirely different beast.
Yeah, RTX.
Right. It's an entirely different beast. There's three different things, billion different panels going on, and a whole slew of shit going on.
Salty I didn't get to see Game Grumps. You know, I wanted to go see
them. Yeah, there's a whole slew of different things, but like that is probably the most expensive badge I've
seen. How much was the badge? It's just,
I think it was like maybe like 60, 70.
Oh, that's not bad.
Which is not bad. It's like,
well, that's PAX price.
Right, exactly. I'm saying that's an, and I say that as with all the love in the world, it's an entirely different beast than what Classic Games Fest is. Yeah. Than what an anime convention is. And like Anime Overload, it's like, again, if you're like at the, like,
because this is the thing. Anime Expo.
I guess, good point.
$50.
Yeah, okay.
For 4 days.
That's fair.
Anime Overload. Little bitty ass place.
Yeah.
$40.
Yeah, for
3 days, but
yeah,
still, it's
point,
and even one day is $30.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Come on. If I want to, I would rather spend tickets, get a hotel, go to Anime Expo. I've been there before. I love it.
Yeah,
because that's like the San Diego Comic Con of anime conventions,
right?
And go meet all the cosplayers that I wanted to see that I know and I miss.
Well, I mean, Akon's still going on, right?
Yeah, and Akon is too, but
I mean, Akon's also a bigger thing, too.
Well, yeah, and like San Japan. San Japan's next. Actually, San Japan, that one I'm going to. That's no ifs, ands, buts. I got to go to San Japan because Rookie is Punks is going to be there. So,
right.
Got to go see them. But yeah, like, you have those in big convention centers, and they cost the same price as Anime Overload here in Austin.
Yeah.
I mean, even IkiCon ain't even that much. IkiCon is only like, and IkiCon is a bigger convention than Anime Overload, and that's supposed to be like their summer.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing. That's their summer one, and that one's more than IkiCon.
I don't know. Maybe, you know, I almost want to imagine.
It's so weird.
I want to imagine, and this will be the last thing we say on this, because we've gone over time, but I'm okay with this because it's a pre-recorded episode, so we give shit. I want to imagine that it has to do with availability. Like, I imagine that maybe it's certain areas and certain times of the year it's cheaper. Because IkiCon's the one that happens, like, right after New Year, right?
Yeah, it's during New Year's Eve week. It's during that entire week.
I don't know. Maybe it's that weekend. I don't know. I'm throwing chicken bones trying to guess.
Because the thing
is, if
you look at it like this, they're always downtown, which is expensive as hell.
That's true.
New Year's Eve week, expensive as hell.
Yeah.
And you're in the area downtown where all is.
Maybe it's that they don't get enough. I don't know. Maybe IkiCon doesn't get enough traffic. Only because it's at New Year's Eve. I don't know. I'm taking guesses.
I go to IkiCon.
I'm trying to explain this.
I know you're trying to, but
I'm trying to explain.
I'm just telling you off on my side. IkiCon gets plenty of experience, and they're cheaper, though. They get a ton of people that go to IkiCon. they get a ton of people that do tournaments there and stuff like that.
I don't know.
And they get them enough sponsors. But this is their summer one, and there's summer one that costs more than that, which is ass backwards. I can understand if Icky costs more and then Anime Overload was cheaper.
You know, maybe Anime Overload is the thing that funds to make IckyCon cheaper.
I'm going to say no on that because they already make all their money off. The thing is, they lost a lot on last year.
Why keep doing Anime Overload?
And the thing is, Anime Overload right now, looking at the invites, it's showing that it's supposed to have 1,000 people there, which, hey, that's a surprise, but I don't know how it's going to go. You know, I want to go, but I just
don't want to spend $40.
I can.
You don't want to spend $40 to go to.
The money to spend $40. I just don't want to spend
$40. Well, the question,
I don't want to be upset at something that I go into. Like PAX, I was never upset going there.
Right.
San Japan, never upset going there. IckyCon, I was never upset going there. We always had a blast.
But the last time you went to Anime Overload, you're just like, this was not.
Well, I had friends that went to Anime Overload. They were like, this is garbage. And, you know, it was. Was it just because
it was like not of panels? Was it the vendors' room was like crap?
It was. It didn't have the feel of anime. It just
interesting.
It just wasn't like you didn't have enough people, so it wasn't that feel. Like even Ushikon was $25.
That was during
spring break week.
I have not thought about Ushikon in such a long time.
Yeah.
I have not thought about all the anime conventions here in Austin in like a long time.
Yeah, I mean,
not a bad way, but just I haven't thought about it.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's plenty of cons, and that's what I'm saying. It's like, there's so many other anime conventions.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's...
And it's in Round Rock, too.
Okay. Maybe that's what it is that there's just far too many conventions. Like, for me, I tend to keep...
Well, and there's not. Well, they're spread it out really well.
I guess so. I guess spread out. Like for me, I tend to keep three conventions that I go to a year. Like I try to go to RTX every year if I can. I try to go to Classic Game Fest if I can every year. And then there's that third floating con that's like,
yeah.
Oh, this is happening. Okay, cool. I'll go there.
And see for me, my cons are I try to throw five in there if you want to count Evo.
Right.
Evo, IckyCon. Always PAX, Classic Game Fest, and I always try to go to Anime Expo.
Okay.
I try to go as much as I can. It hits at the wrong time. The reason why I didn't go to Anime Expo so many times is because Evo was going on the same time.
But they
had switched the schedule, and I was like, oh, I could do that. But the thing is, those two are so close, it sucks. It's like either you're gonna spend money and go to Anime Expo, or you're going to spend money.
See, next year, not 2017, but 2018, I'm going to really make an effort to go to MAGFest because I have not done
it. Ooh, thanks for reminding me. Oh, no, I think I was too late. Shit.
Are you actually playing MAGFest this year?
I wanted to. I think I was too late.
See, I was too late
for the application. The application would have that, though. They were like, oh, it's due on the on the weekend of Classic Game Fest. I'm like, screwed. I'll probably still go.
No, yeah. If I wasn't going to Japan this year, I'd probably go to MAGFest, but I'm going to make an effort next 2018 year to go.
I know
it happens like in February. That's why it's such a weird.
No, actually, it started in January during the same. It used to be in January the same exact time when PAX started.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
South in that.
Right. Plotting. It was just a weird. Again, it was a weird thing.
Now they fixed it to February.
They fixed
it.
Okay. Yeah. One of them, I know it's during a month where I have to plan accordingly, and that's all.
And that's all I want to go next year because I think it's going to be extremely fun. Plus, there's a lot of artists that I see there, like Samus, which I always recommend to a ton of people because she's just
well. For me, it's like, and we recently had Chris Getman, better known as Maze Dude, on. And I've been such an OC Remix guy that I'm like, there are people there I've always wanted to meet and sort of go and that's where Mike Mustin is there and all like the one ups and shit.
And
that's
where I met Brandon Hood, the runner of Chiptunes Win.
Yeah.
Here at South By recently, and at actually the barbecue event that we had not too long ago when him and his wife was there, and they're gonna be there. And I actually played some songs from his album, from their album that recently just came out over there at Classic Game Fest. But it's there's a ton of other artists I want to see. Like, I met Shafe the Dark Lord, Shy Guy, all those guys. It's just I want to go see him again because it's like that big family.
No, yeah, MAGFest, like again, MAGFest is the event I have not done that I know I need to do.
I have not either. And I'm like, I do nerdcore here at South By because it's here, but that's easy.
Yeah.
I need to go there.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to make that a fix. So, yeah, I completely understand.
Vincent, we've gone well over time, but thank you so much for doing this episode with me.
Always, you know I love to be
You're always welcome here. Where can people find you online these days, though, sir?
I am on Facebook, DJ Rockman, but it's DJ capital letters and in peers in the Rockman. So
r.o.c.k.m.a.n.
And that's it. And
not DJ Cutman.
No, not DJ Cutman.
As some people mistake you for.
Yeah. Or
not DJ Rock Band.
Or Rock Band or Robo Rob.
Robo. Who is DJ Robo Rob now? I know we're breaking character this.
No, that is actually DJ.
That's a DJ name, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's a good buddy of mine, DJ Robo Rob.
I've heard of that name.
He does some amazing stuff. He actually did a album with Samus, or song with Samus.
That's why the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's awesome, though. But yeah, you can find me on there, and you can also find that same name on SoundCloud.
Yes, and you can hear all the stuff like that. Of course, you find me. I'm at VincentForcer4 there on the Twitters. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links in the show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8bitlifepodcast, and, of course, everything else, the network and things like that. And after you've bought any music you have from any artists we've mentioned, after you've spent all your money on all the cons that have been mentioned and stuff like that, and maybe after you've found that rare copy of, you know, the Wii. The Wii.
Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Yes. And you have like $5 left over, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and help this podcast become bigger, better, and more awesomer. So that's it for the day. Next time, we're talking something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Peace.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.